Blog Talk Radio.
Live and bass from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
The master, the prime poet designed for disaster. A crime candidate, the light heavyweight. I might levitate right through the heaven's gate. Rhymes record break neck spines and vertebrae. Step on the plane like Kanye, I heard him say. It's murder one when he murder tracks. I'm a dirt bag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags. My first rap, catch Roberta Flack. I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim Thug and them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like in Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect, all I need is a check. Might even check.
I gotta tell you, I gotta get Sly checked out. You know, we make the. I'm an official FB Nation contributor now, Matt Hardlicka, and I can't even get my damn music to come on time. I tell you what, I gotta get my contract reworked or something. That's crazy. I apologize for the technical difficulties there, folks. It was a little bit of a wait for the Sly to come on. We'll figure that out and fix it for our next episode. But thank you for your patience, and thank you once again for joining us for a brand new episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, and this is a unique episode. Looking back on our history, we've done about 70 of these now. I have to count the exact number. I'm pretty sure that I've never only had one guest. I'm pretty sure I've always had at least Chris or Kevin Leip and then somebody else. I'm pretty sure I've never just had one. I've been on podcasts with Ryan Glover recently of BlueWorldOrder.com and obviously our own Chip Williams here at GBB. And he only has one guest, and Ryan only has one guest, so maybe that's kind of a podcast thing. I've never really done it that way, but this is my first time, and I cannot think of a better guy to get into it with in terms of a one-guest podcasting kind of thing than my good buddy, senior writer over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com, Mr. Matt Hardlicka. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I feel deeply, deeply honored to be the first and only guest on a podcast. I mean, you know, it's only downhill from here, Joe.
You know, it's kind of big time as you are a part of what is GBB Live history. You should feel honored and privileged, and I am honored and privileged to have you in my presence, sir. So thank you so much for joining us, and thank you again to our wonderful audience who's going to be along for our ride here. A little bit shorter episode, Chris Faulkner not able to be with us this evening. Matt was always going to be our only guest as we record these later shows in the month of January. We're shortening the show as it was, so this is a condensed version of GBB Live, and it'll be nice to have an extended conversation with Matt here. It won't be an hour and a half, thankfully. We both have to go to the bathroom and things of that nature, but it will be a good episode, and we have a lot of things to dive into with the current state of the Memphis Grizzlies, which looks a lot better from the outside than I think most people who are paying attention actually know that it is. Ways to get in touch with the program. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter, at Joe Mullinax. You can follow Matt at The Real HRDLICKA. And you can follow the show, GBB Live, on Twitter, at GBB Live. The chat room is also open as we speak. This will be a great night for interaction. We've already had a couple of questions asked on Twitter that we're going to talk about on the show that maybe we weren't going to talk about otherwise. So by all means, Twitter is a great way to interact with us and ask those questions. Another great way to do it is through the chat room. If you're listening to the show live, log into the chat, interact with me. I moderate the chat there, and if you have any questions for Matt or myself, I will get those questions out to you, or get them out to Matt, excuse me, from there. Also, make sure that you listen to the end of the program. Like I said, show will be a little bit shorter than usual because Matt has a busy life. He has a wife and daughter, much like me. So we will shorten it. It won't be a long conversation, but at the end of the program, I will be asking our next Fan Essentials trivia question. A few folks chimed in last week with the correct answer, so they have been entered into the drawing for a Fan Essentials box. Our great sponsor, Fan Essentials. Check them out at fanessentials.net for all of your Grizzly swag needs. They have a lot of other NBA team swag things as well, scarves and shirts and glasses and all sorts of amazing things. But you, of course, if you're listening to this podcast, for more likely than not, you're probably interested in the Grizzly swag first and foremost. You get a box sent to you every month. It's a great deal. Awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. Make sure you're checking out fanessentials.net, and we are very excited about that partnership with them moving forward. Tonight, Matt and I have a lot to discuss. The Memphis Grizzlies just completed a 5-1 homestand, which by any definition has to be considered a success. I would have thought 4-2 was a success at the end of a homestand like this, the longest one of the season for these Memphis Grizzlies. They pull out 5-1, a couple of miraculous wins here and there, but you'll take whatever you can get. And the point has been made, and we'll talk more about this throughout the show, and this is a perfect example of these Grizzlies, both historically in terms of the grit and grind era, as well as this past season. I believe Chris Harrington, one of the best Grizzly writers out there of the Memphis Commercial Appeal, he talked about how the Grizzlies went 5-1 on this homestand, and they did it with a +1 point differential. Now, that is remarkable. And the fact that they are pulling out these kinds of wins, the fact that they are where they are currently in the standings as we record this podcast on this Wednesday night, January 20th, heading into Memphis's next game in Denver, they are currently the 5 seed in the Western Conference, all right? And as I said on Twitter, and Harrington corrected me, rightfully so, I had them at the 5 seed going into the season, competing for that 4 and 5 seed slot. Most people had them in the 6. So they are, as of right now, tied for the 5/6 seed. They are 2 games in front of Houston for the 7 seed, so they would solidly be in the 6 if they fall a half game behind Dallas or whatever the schedule makers may make happen there. But the fact that the Grizzlies are right where we thought they would be in terms of the standings, and in some cases a little bit better, that has to be surprising considering how poor the Memphis Grizzlies have played so far this season. Of course, if you, again, follow the NBA, you watch the conference at work, you know that the Western Conference is much weaker this season. You know that outside of Golden State, who's a juggernaut, San Antonio, who's a juggernaut, Oklahoma City, who's playing very good basketball under Billy Donovan, you can only imagine, barring injury, they'll probably improve. And then the L.A. Clippers, who, unfortunately, as a Memphis Grizzlies fan, they're 9-1 in their last 10 games. They're playing good basketball, and oh, by the way, they've been doing it without Blake Griffin. So those 4 teams are arguably the class of the conference, with Golden State and San Antonio being the first tier, then below them, Oklahoma City and the Clippers, and then there's everybody else. But I'll pose this question to you, Matt, to get us started here. You look at these standings, you watch the 5-1 homestand. Supposedly, there's a lot of reason for optimism, but most folks that have been watching this team all season just don't seem to really be buying into the positivity right now.
Wait, what's your question?
I guess
you ended with a statement.
Yeah. Damn it, Matt, it's my show. I can end with statements if I want to. Yes, if you would please talk about, Matt, if you would talk about what is your initial feeling about where these Grizzlies are right now? Are you optimistic about where they're at? Are you pessimistic? Somewhere in between?
I guess a fair statement is probably somewhere in between. I'm in the state of sort of I'm not complaining with where they're at. This is about, I mean, you look, they're 5 games over 500, like you said, the 5 seed. That probably oversells how good they've been. I mean, they have had 5 buzzer beaters. I mean, seriously, they've had 5 buzzer beaters, 2 against the Detroit Pistons. And I think this is a first year, the Grizzlies sort of historically in the grit and grind era have outperformed their point differential. I think this is the first year that point differential is more indicative of their play. You know, you don't get 3 of those buzzer beaters to go in and suddenly you're a lot closer to 500 than you look right now. You sort of look at their play, you know, their bottom 5 in offense and about average in defense. And this team, to be considered, you know, the 5th best team in either conference, they really need to hang their hat probably on defense and get a little bit better in offense. So to be the 5 seed going forward, they need to improve on both ends. And I think that's probably – I mean, I think anybody would that watches the team with any amount of diligence probably agrees with that. I mean, I would say they're lucky to be five games over and the five seed. What about you?
They're absolutely lucky to be where they are. I think luck, and in the past, and this has always been a trend with these Grizzlies ever since. National pundits, people that are really into the analytics, lots of folks at ESPN, they've been predicting the downfall of the Grizzlies for years now. They are not analytics darlings, which is always why it was so ironic or hilarious, depending on how you view it, maybe a little bit of both, that a guy like John Hollinger comes in and is a part of that front office now, one of the, you know, for lack of a better word, one of the fathers of modern basketball analytics, or at least in terms of the growing popularity of it, maybe is the best way to put it. But anyway, he comes in, and this is a Grizzlies team that kind of goes against that grain. We talked about point differential earlier. A team that has the point differential of the Memphis Grizzlies should not be where they're at. They are not a very good basketball team when you look at those kinds of numbers. And because of that, you think that they're lucky. But at the same time, they've been doing it for years now, Matt. They've been going against that grain. They've been winning these games that, in theory, they should not be winning. And because of that, I think that it's a combination of things. They're lucky to be the five seed. I think that is the major thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because of the Western Conference being weaker. I mean, if you look at the East right now, Memphis's win percentage is currently 55.8. 55.8 actually right now in the East would also put them at the five seed, believe it or not. The Eastern Conference has cooled off a good bit as well. So everybody sucks if you're not at Golden State, San Antonio, or Cleveland. And then after Golden State and Cleveland playing – on Martin Luther King Day, you can argue that it's only Golden State and San Antonio because they blew out the Cavaliers. Of course, it's January.
I heard an interesting theory about this, and I hadn't heard it before, so I wanted to go ahead and share it with you guys. Basically, somebody argued that maybe the conferences are about what they were before, besides injuries, you know, Utah, Memphis, you know, Portland taking a back seat, those things have hurt the Western Conference. But their general statement was, you know, teams like the Clippers and, you know, even Dallas and Memphis, basically the reason they look bad is because they're playing, they've had to play San Antonio and Golden State, and they get blown out by 20.
True.
And, like,
no, that's
they were like, when you have two historic teams in the same conference, and they're beating everybody by double digits. The teams they play the most are the teams in their own conference, and that's depressing everybody else. And I said, you know what, that makes sense, especially for Memphis, because, you know, we've already played San Antonio twice, Golden State twice, and Cleveland once. I mean, you know, that was true even a month ago. So we got basically half of the tough games, you know, basically over and done with, third of the way through the season. So, you know, if you're battling historically great teams and you're losing by double digits just like everybody else, although, I mean, Memphis got beat a little bit worse than that, but, you know, that contributes to it. So everybody's point differential, their wins and losses get deflated because, you know, you're basically playing the 98 Bulls four times.
Yeah, that is a good point. The Spurs and Golden State are just on such a remarkable high right now in terms of their skill and the way that they're playing. San Antonio really doing it with defense more than anything. And then, of course, Golden State, a prolific offense. There's more and more articles coming out about the brilliance of Steph Curry and how he is essentially having a Michael Jordan-esque season, perhaps even much better than Jordan ever did. The historical aspect of this is something that has to be taken into account, and I think you're wise, Matt, to bring that up. But at the same time, these Memphis Grizzlies and the rest of the West, as the games and the season play out, again, for Memphis starting Thursday night against the Denver Nuggets in Denver, they're going to have to try to find a way to hang around, at the very least, that 60. Because while you probably don't want to see Oklahoma City in the first round, you've competed with them when you're healthy. You've gotten to the point of a game 7 where you were able to compete and be in a spot to have a chance to win that series when they were at the height of their powers. So you have a shot. It's not a very good shot, but you got a chance. If you fall to that 7 or 8 seed, you have absolutely no chance. It's a collision course between the Spurs and the Warriors. Everybody knows it at this point, barring a catastrophic injury. And if you want to give yourself a shot to at least get back to where you were last season, which would be a remarkable success if they were able to do it, considering all of the things that have gone on with the Grizzlies so far in 2015-2016, you have to avoid that 7-8 seed matchup in that first round against either of those two monsters.
Yeah, I think that that's fair, although I haven't been thinking that way. Well, let me ask you this. You agree that probably the 5 seed is the ceiling, right? You don't see
absolutely.
Them
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So I agree with that. And, you know, if they get that 5 seed, that would be fantastic from my perspective. I don't think that they're going to end up there. I think I just want them to make the playoffs. If they make the playoffs, I consider it, you know, with everything that's happened this year and with all the weird stuff, with basically every player on the roster underperforming for most of the season, I consider making the playoffs in that respect a win. They have a negative point differential right now. They have 5 buzzer beaters. And, you know, a year ago, you were looking at 50 wins or more to make the playoffs, and they're not going to probably sniff that. But with that said, I mean, I could still see scenarios where they just, you know, all it takes is they're 5-1 on that homestand. All it takes is another, you know, 5-1, you know, 6-0 run, which this team can do, especially with kind of the soft schedule coming up. You know, so I could see an argument for them just starting to click. But the thing that I think most fans are looking at is, even in these wins, like you look at the New York game, that's not a good one. The Pelicans game, oh my gosh. You look at the team that the Pelicans are throwing out there and you're just like, this team is nowhere close to as good as Memphis. And still it's, you know, a one possession game down the stretch. You know, that stuff can't happen if Memphis is going to get the 5 seed. Like, they're just going to start giving away some of those games, you know.
You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Molinax. This is a special edition of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Very much more in the podcast kind of structure, less like a radio show tonight. My conversation is with Matt Ardlicka, senior writer over at grizzlybearblues.com. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you do not already do so, at the real HRDLICKA. And Matt, we talk about the tough schedule that Memphis had to start the season. According to ESPN's NBA RPI rankings, they currently have the 8th strongest schedule that has been played in the NBA. And among Western Conference teams, they are 4th. Sacramento's played the toughest schedule at a 5.516 in terms of winning, win percentage. Then you have New Orleans, then you have Denver, and then it's Memphis. But Memphis is the only team, Matt, in the top 10 that has a current winning percentage over 500 plus a top 10 strength of schedule. So that has to stand for something. I think that that speaks to them having a tough run at the beginning of the year, like we all know they did. And I also think it speaks to what you were talking about in terms of the fact Memphis might be what they've always been, and they're just playing historic good teams. I mean, Golden State, San Antonio, and Cleveland, you know, if those three teams are playing at the level that perhaps they were playing at last season, you're probably getting at least one of those games. So that makes your 24-19 look a little bit better at 25-18. And then if you're talking that kind of measurement, you're not getting blown out as badly either. But it's not just those great teams that they're getting blown out by. They're also getting blown out by teams that aren't as good. The Houston Rockets are a great example. The last loss that the Memphis Grizzlies suffered was at the hands of the Houston Rockets. That was at home, and they lost by 16. And they were outperformed by James Harden, Dwight Howard, all that jazz. And when you look at the losses that Memphis has suffered, taking away the Utah game and Rodney Hood, and we won't talk about Rodney Hood and Jordan Adams. That would make the podcast a lot longer. But when you look at the losses that they've suffered, that they have struggled both in terms of rebounding, and they have struggled against the stars that they play. And to me, and this has kind of been my rallying cry on the show the past couple of weeks, Matt, so often the finger of blame is pointed at Jeff Green, and rightfully so. I'm still captaining the ship because, you know, I'm going to go down with the ship, fully acknowledging that he's better off the bench. I've always acknowledged that, but also fully acknowledging you can officially say the trade didn't work, okay? I'm bowing out on that. But when you have a player the quality of Marc Gasol, who you're giving max contract money to, and as you and I have talked about, you've tried to help me along trying to understand this stuff more, how guys like Matt Barnes are going to make, you know, $8 to $10 million a year next season. It's very possible, I'm acknowledging. But anyway, guys like Marc Gasol, who are making such massive contracts, making so much money, he is your franchise cornerstone, and when he is underperforming to the level he had been up until recently, to me, that means more than anything else. And these other teams that are succeeding have stars that are excelling. So how much of this last week's Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day was about Jeff Green and blame being placed on him, how much blame you place on him? I'm interested in how you view Marc Gasol on this team. Are you okay with the way that he's been playing? Because I know that you're one of the ones who makes a fair argument that he's asked to do so much offensively, defensively, that he's not going to – he can't be measured to the same regard that, say, maybe a James Harden is, who isn't asked to be the cornerstone of scheme on both sides of the court.
Yeah, well, I mean, James Harden would be a nice parallel, too, because up until last year, he basically just gave up on defense and just sort of – I always gave him a pass on that, even though it was comical. You know, you'd see some binds about him just getting blown by. But he's asked to do so much on offense, and it's such a drain over 82 games plus the playoffs that I've always sort of understood that I gave people a pass, you know. I mean, there's the list of guys that can do it on both ends is basically like LeBron James. And that's sort of it. I mean, even Anthony Davis, you know, you don't think of him as not being a fantastic defensive player, but he's really not a fantastic defensive player. He makes mistakes. He gets pushed around. He could fight a little bit harder. So he's got warts on that end. I don't necessarily think it's all effort with him, you know, some technique. But anyway, with Mark, I will say this. Like I watched him play at the beginning of the year, and he couldn't score in the post. He couldn't score in the post for like 3 months. You know, he always had that ability to take that running hook in the lane until this year. He always had the counter move of spinning baseline. He's only really been able to, I think, from memory, I finally saw him do it in this homestand where he spun baseline, you know, when he kind of like people are loading up on that hook with his right hand going to the middle, and then he spins off of them. It's like a really quick spin where he like kind of palms the ball. He, for the first time, was able to execute that move like during the homestand, and he had tried it before. So my whole theory was basically he's either out of shape or he's hurt or, you know, something like that. And I even gave him a pass on that, too, because, you know, last year he came in amazing shape. First month was fantastic. I mean, that was probably the best month of his career. Second month was fantastic, you know. And then basically after that, we got diminishing returns. And I just think that, you know, I rightly or wrongly, I think maybe mentally the team even maybe had came in and said, at least this is my pet theory. This is what gets me to sleep through the night. So I'm not saying this is not sourced. This is not me saying this is definitely what happened. But what gets me through the night is sort of thinking that they tried it one way last year, which is coming in great shape. You know, Zach was in shape. Tony was in shape. Mark was in shape. Everybody was playing great. They basically won the NBA in November and December. And then they were a mass unit by, you know, April. They were limping into the playoffs. You know, Mike Conley breaking his face in the playoffs isn't, you know, didn't happen because he played hard in December and January, but, you know, Mark was tailing off. Vince never got right. Zebo, TA, they both had to take time off. And I really think that the team sort of mentally was like, you know, we tried it that way last year and it didn't work. So let's do the Spurs way. Let's all just kind of chill. You know, and with Mike, I think that legitimate concerns about, you know, he played amazing in that Golden State series, especially the first game back. And for me, that was probably the proudest I've ever been of, like, any Grizzlies player was that game three. But, you know, you get your face broke, and I don't fault anybody for being a little tentative even 6 months later, you know what I mean? So maybe that was lingering, you know? I don't know. But to your question about, like, who to blame, I mean, they're all to blame. None of them are playing good. None of them are – every single – there was a point, and it still may be true. I haven't run the numbers, like, recently, but because they have been playing better over the homestand. But every single player except for Jermichael Green on the roster was underperforming career averages. So even guys like – you know, like Mark and Mike are both at the, you know, the prime or tail end of their prime. They were better, like, their second year, third year, fourth year in the league than they were just now, and that shouldn't be the case. So, I mean, everybody has share to blame. Jeff Green's the easiest to blame because, you know, everybody – he got an unfair shake because the national media basically billed it as this is the missing piece. And the Grizzlies went after it like that. And I never, you know, like we've talked about it, I never believed that. I never bought into it. So, you know, as far as the player that didn't meet expectations, that would be, he was kind of set up for failure there, I think. But, you know, like I said, they all deserve blame, equal blame, I think. So what about you? What do you think?
I would say I agree with that completely. And the fact that they're all underperforming is major. And it's not rocket scientists. You know, there's people that this is their profession, like a Chris Harrington, a Jeff Calkins, all folks we've had on the show in the past, great minds, very worthy of their pay grade. You've got guys like Kevin Leip, who worked with us at Grizzly Bear Blues before he left and became the writer for the Memphis Flyers, the Beyond the Arc blog. You know, there's so many people, all these different blogs, Three Shades of Blue, Hall Harden Hoop City, Grizzly Bear Blues, Blue World Order. It's blown up the past few years, and everybody has an opinion. Mm-hmm. But you know what, Matt? Sometimes it's damn simple enough that they're just not very good. You can break down all the numbers, you can watch all the tape, and you can just see with your eyes that these guys have not been playing good basketball. And you can read all the articles and blog posts and podcasts and listen to all the podcasts. And at some point, you got to just acknowledge that they're not playing well. And Jeff Green is not playing well. But to your point, as you just said, Matt, because of the recent success on the homestand, his current season in Memphis, PER of 11.8, and again, that's not a perfect stat. Please don't tweet and write and say, oh, you use PER, you're stupid. I get it. All right, just one measuring stick. In terms of his season currently, 11.8, he's still under his career average.
That would be like slightly below, right?
Exactly.
He's, what, 13 or something? 13.2.
So he's still playing under his career average. The career average for Mario Chalmers, and we'll talk about all these free agent guys coming up here in a moment. The career average for Mario Chalmers in terms of PER is 12.7, and he's currently at 17.9. So he's overachieving, Chalmers currently. Courtney Lee, this season, PER of 11.8. His career PER is a 12.2, so a little bit under the radar there, or under the number. And then for Matt Barnes, his career PER is a 13.1, and he's currently at 13.0. So they're starting to rise up a little bit to the mean, and especially Barnes. He's never going to be a sharp-shooting three-point guy. We knew that when they acquired him. He'll shoot the shot, which is an upgrade from, say, a Courtney Lee, who seems to adverse to ever shooting. But Barnes will at least shoot the ball. And he was shooting so poorly, and people were so frustrated by him shooting the ball. Sometimes you regress to the mean, and sometimes you, and this might not be the right way to put it, you progress to the mean. Sometimes you start slowly, and eventually you're going to get back to your average numbers just by having hot shooting nights, and that's what's happened for Matt Barnes recently. He is playing much better and shooting much better from three. I did in the Friday Three last week talking about his six made threes against Detroit. You know, you could argue that was just as much a part of that win, if not more, than Mario Chalmers' miracle shot there at the end of the game. So it comes down to the fact that this team is underachieved, this team is underperformed, but at the same time, they're starting to come back, and it all ties back into what we were talking about at the beginning of the show here, Matt. They had a hellacious start to the season. Their schedule is starting to even out. They're starting to play against lesser competition, and that's allowing for their numbers to get up. But going back to Marc Gasol, kind of tying into what we were going to talk about in our segment here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live, he had a quote recently in the commercial appeal. It was after his dominant performance against the New York Knicks, 37 or 38 points, I believe, attempted 29 shots. And so many people that have watched these Grizzlies all these years, going back to the beginning of the grit and grind era, perhaps even a little bit before, and have watched Marc Gasol develop, this is what people want to see. And you saw it a lot more last season during his contract year, and Anthony Sain and others have their theories on that. But this year, he's not nearly been as aggressive offensively. And he had a tremendous offensive game against the Knicks, led to a victory, and everybody was ecstatic except for Marc Gasol. He was furious, it sounds like, in the locker room. He talked about how it wasn't the right way to play basketball, and we know that the way that you play the game is so important to Marc, making the right play, doing all of those variety of things that maybe don't come with taking 29 shots individually. So I jokingly say that Marc Gasol hates scoring the basketball, but I don't know. He clearly doesn't think that he is the right play consistently enough, when in reality he needs to look around at this roster and say, you know what, the right play is me a good bit of the time, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it was actually funny. I was watching that game. I think I watched it Monday morning because I missed it. When was the Knicks game? I watched it 2 days after the game.
Knicks game was, I have the schedule right here. Give me a moment. The Knicks game was on Saturday night.
Yeah. I was at an engagement, so I didn't watch it until Monday morning at like 5 a.m. when my daughter woke me up and said, I'm up for the week. So I got her up and I started, you know, feeding her. My wife was getting ready for work. So I just turned on the game and started watching it. And actually, like, it seemed like Marc was playing exactly how he had normally played. He was just more willing to take that mid-range jumper. I mean, you look at a lot of his, scoring, it was just shooting the shot that is always open. I mean, he could take defenses, that is the shot defenses want to give, and he happens to be really good at it. Sometimes here, he just doesn't want to shoot it. I don't know if that's just like, I don't think that he sits there and thinks about, you know, the fact that this two-point shot is going to go in 40% of the time. But if I kick it to the corner to Courtney Lee or whoever is standing there, random Grizzlies player, he doesn't know their percentages in his head and is calculating whether that three is greater than his two. I just think he wants to play the game his mindset is the open player should shoot, and, you know, that isn't necessarily Marc Gasol, you know. He should shoot more. He's the best player on the team.
And then on the flip side of that, Marc Gasol, obviously, the best player on the team. I agree with you completely. The second best player, also the second blessed, I guess, the way you look at it, but the second best player on the team, beyond a shadow of a doubt at this point, is Mike Conley. Of course, health issues continue to be a concern. I think it's fair now to question the durability of Mike moving forward. And to your credit, Matt, I believe it was in one of your season preview pieces where you asked about Mike Conley possibly regressing because of his size, how historically speaking, point guards that are built like Conley do not age particularly well. And you never said that he couldn't go against the grain, because this Memphis team has done that from time to time. But at the same time, you kind of raised the point and the concern, is he going to be able to sustain this level of play moving forward? And that has kind of shown itself. Now, he returned in the Martin Luther King Jr. game against the Pelicans. He played very well, 15 points, 10 assists. But that begs the question, before we move on to the other free agents, and it was a question that was asked by Memphis City Design.
The answer is yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah, you already know the question. And you and I have talked about this before, so I figured that would still be the answer. Even given everything that has happened, injuries, regardless, all that, do you think Conley should or will still get a max or near max deal, even after all the stuff that's happened?
Yes, yes. And it is simple supply and demand. You know, the supply is if you go and look at the second best point guard, who do you think, just guessing, who do you think the second best free agent point guard would be? Don't go and pull up a roster.
I'm not pulling up a roster. Second best free agent point guard.
Yeah.
If I had to guess just off the top of my head, I guess Rajon Rondo?
Yes, Rajon Rondo.
See, I'm proud of myself.
Gap,
there you go.
Yes. And that is even – I don't even think he's that good. Like,
he's not.
You look at the rest of the guys, and definitely Rondo is a guy who, even if a team talks themselves into, you know, thinking that he could be, you know, a difference maker or whatnot, he's still an awkward fit. You have to sort of engineer the rest of your team around him. Whereas Conley is, you know, a B-plus to an A-minus at everything. Rondo has some good qualities and some really, really bad qualities. So he's taking off the table as many things he's putting on. But you look at that, and every team, even if they wanted to, Golden State could even clear out max cap room if they needed. They really could. All they had to do is renounce Barnes, trade Bogut, trade, you know, Iguodala for, you know, something. They could even get something for those guys. And they could go out and sign Kevin Durant if they wanted to. Like, they could do that. It's well within their reach. I don't think they will, and I don't think Durant will go there. But when you have that many teams suddenly having cap room, like substantial amounts, every contract is movable. And what that means is every team now can clear the room that they need to. So any team that Conley wants to go to, conceivably, he could go to. With that said, I think everybody assumes he's going to be back in a Grizzlies uniform, but that's what you're bidding against. It's just simple, you know, supply and demand. Everybody wants good players. There aren't that many out there, and everybody has the means to go get them. But, you know, the good thing is for free agency, even if Conley gets that max deal, the $25 million, I think, is his starting place. Even if he gets that, let's just say it's the worst case scenario from Grizzlies' perspective in terms of him re-signing, he gets his straight max, $25 million. His cap holds only $15 million. So you're in a situation where if you can convince another player to come, you can sign them before Mike, and that $10 million difference between his cap hold and the actual amount of his salary, you can save that. That becomes cap room, if that makes sense. So that actually is a good situation. And the other reason he's going to get the max is because even if the Grizzlies have to give him a max, Zebo and Tony are coming off the books the year after, and the salary cap is jumping another $20 million, like literally another max contract. It is jumping the year after. So you can sign him to a max, possibly sign, you know, a free agent making an exorbitant amount of money, and still the next year be in a spot where you're not even near the salary cap. You know, it precludes no other business to give Mike Conley a max contract this summer.
This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Molinax. The voice that you heard before mine was that of Matt Ardlicka, senior writer over at grizzlybearblues.com. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you do not already do so, @TheReal, HRDLICKA. And it's so fascinating, and you and I have talked about this, like I said earlier, and you helped me understand, and it still just sounds like so much money, but when you consider it as a percentage of the cap, I get it. It really is, and especially in 2 years, as you just mentioned, it's really not going to be that big at all. They're going to be under the salary cap after maxing out Mike and after offering a guy like, I know you're a big Evan Fournier fan, a.k.a. Never Google. If he becomes a Memphis Grizzly, signing a 20-some million-dollar contract, which sounds like so much for him, but in reality, it really isn't as the NBA develops and evolves, and that's going to bear watching moving forward. And it also is going to affect the four other major Grizzly free agents that are up on the docket, and that ties into our Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day, Matt. I asked Twitter and Facebook, and you always kind of duck when you ask both of those, but the question of the day was, outside of Mike Conley, who you just argued will get the max contract, and I would agree with you at this point, for the same exact reasons you said, you argued it very well, which upcoming Grizzly free agent do you most want back in Memphis? The four options, of course, the main ones that folks think of, I don't think people are really considering Vince Carter because of his unguaranteed deal and all that, are Jeff Green, which surprisingly got no votes at all, Mario Chalmers, Courtney Lee, and Matt Barnes. All right, so those are the four guys who are going to be free agents, contracts expired, they will be on the move. So who did folks want to come back? Denise at Volmatic said Super Mario, so Mario Chalmers, she says he is an excellent backup for Mike Conley. Brandon at Ball from Grace, a loyal member of the community over at GBB, very good tweeter and conversationalist on Twitter. He says, please see my Avi, and if you haven't seen his Avi, you should check it out. It's Courtney Lee, looking very fly and fresh to death. So So his vote is for Courtney Lee, and Jonah Jordan, one of our contributors over at GBB, agrees at JMJ 24/7 Sports. He says his the only answer. John Hartsfield at Jack Move Johnny says Chalmers and Lee. The rule is you can only pick one, but he corrects himself quickly and says Chalmers if I can only pick one. Sharon Richardson at SK Squeaky says Rio, Mario Chalmers. JJ Baker at JJ underscore P underscore Baker, thanks again for chiming in and listening, buddy, says Rio followed by Barnes. And then a couple more responses. A Han Solo Cup at Hyde Park Swag says Rio is the only one worth a crap. So that's pretty upsetting there. Memphis City Design at Memphis City Design says Chalmers. And then Justin Sims at Big Sim 50. Again, thanks for listening and chiming, bud. Says, let me answer your question with a question. Which free agent can you tolerate Memphis keeping the most? And I really like that response to that question because it really is amazing. Mario Chalmers, a guy who, if you're a Memphis Tigers fan, you have hated for the past 7 years now, can't stand the guy because of what he did in that title game against Kansas or against Memphis when he was at Kansas. And now here's a guy in the NBA for the Memphis Grizzlies, who is acquired for a beloved Grizzly in Beno Udra. People love that dude. He's moved, clearly needed to be. Anybody, again, who follows the team and is unbiased and is, you can love Beno and acknowledge it wasn't working. So they upgrade with Mario Chalmers. He comes in, and amongst, I just read off 10 or 12 responses, Matt, and it was either Mario Chalmers, who obviously comes with Memphis baggage, or Matt freaking Barnes, who going into the season, people couldn't stand the guy. They hated his guts. So that is a good example. Matt Moore, HP Basketball of CBSSports.com, he likes to say, and others have said it too, that this season is just weird. And I think for me, that is how it's weird for the Memphis Grizzlies. Two of the biggest, most underrated contributors to whatever success Memphis has had so far are two guys that 8 or 9 months ago were hated in Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I'd never actually thought about that before. You know, I guess my question, I couldn't say, it all depends on the contracts. I would say this, that I'm not particularly interested in any of those guys' next contracts. When you look at Chalmers, for instance, he's 29, you know, probably has designs on starting. I actually think him, if I were to guess, I would say Courtney Lee is probably the most likely to want to resign in Memphis. Like, you could get, like, possibly the best quote-unquote deal as far as a deal will go, you know, in next year's dollars. But you have to remember this. Anybody they resign, to resign somebody, you have to keep their cap hold on the books. And that cap hold eats into your cap space. So really, the question is, if you want to re-sign somebody, that precludes you doing other things. So, like I've argued, if you want to sort of consolidate your free agent dollars around one person, you can't keep anybody. So Matt Barnes makes the least amount, and your cap hold is always based on the previous year's salary. So Matt Barnes makes something under $4 million, let's say it's $3.5 million. That cap hold is 190%, I think, of his current salary. So it's still like over $6 million, somewhere around $7 million. Let's just say $6.5 million. So that eats up $6.5 million of your cap space. Keeping him on the books knocks you from $22 million and change down to like $16 million. I'm just going to tell, like I said this in our chat, but $16 million is not going to get you what you think it's going to get you next year. I mean, $16 million is going to replace Courtney Lee. It's not going to get you somebody like significantly better than Courtney Lee. It might get you Courtney, like a younger Courtney Lee, but it's not going to get you like a significantly better version of Courtney Lee. You know, if you want to retain Courtney Lee, his cap hold is like $10 million. So, you know, if you're working with $22 million in cap room, now you have $12 million. And the thing that hurts the most is, and I got this fact checked by the great Bobby Marks, who used to work in the Brooklyn Nets front office.
Fantastic.
He's fantastic. And he actually answers questions on Twitter, which is great, because I don't know all these things. it's so hard to keep track of everything, but I got him to confirm this. If you want to sign a restricted free agent, you know, the process is basically you work it out with your with the agent, but then he has to sign a contract, and the team has his incumbent team, the team he has that currently has his rights, has like 3 days to match. But the kicker is for when he signs that contract, you have to have the cap space. So for a guy like Harrison Barnes, like if Grizzlies wanted to offer Harrison Barnes the max contract, which is what it's going to take to get Harrison Barnes to Memphis, okay, that's $21 million in change. The Grizzlies to sign him just to an offer sheet, not even like bringing him to Memphis, just a chance to bring him to Memphis, have to renounce every single one of those players. They have to renounce Chalmers, Courtney Lee, Matt Barnes, Jeff Green. They have to cut Vince Carter. They may, I don't know the math in my head, they may even have to get rid of James Ennis or one of the other minimum guys. I'm not sure about that. So, and then after that, the Warriors, all they have to do is match, and the Grizzlies cannot re-sign. They have to use then cap space to re-sign any of those guys. And I, like I said, even that $22 million, you're going to get two of those four guys, if that. So that is a huge, huge risk to take, you know, when signing a restricted free agent. That's why I think they have to overpay. If they want to get a guy like Evan Fournier, who, like I said, I'm a big fan of, you have to know that that other team is not matching, because if they do match, you now are out your own guys too.
We're finishing up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Got a couple more questions for GrizzlyBearBlues.com senior writer Matt Arlicka. Follow him on Twitter at The Real HRDLICKA. And again, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, and I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Real quick, Matt, so we can hold ourselves as close as possible to our time limit that we set before the show. One topic I really did want to cover with you very quickly was the idea of trades. There's been rumored Jeff Green for Markieff Morris ideas of the Phoenix Suns. And at this point, I think most folks would agree that might be a good move. Markieff's attitude kind of turns me off, but I can understand why people would like him. Again, I like Jeff Green, but I'm not stupid enough to argue about it anymore with anybody because I don't have many legs to stand on. From there, you have rumored, not rumored, but floated ideas by Ron Tillery of the Memphis Commercial Appeal talking about bringing back Rudy Gay, which sounds pretty crazy, but it maybe isn't as crazy as it once was. Maybe a Jeff Green and Jordan Adams trade can get you that. There's teams out there, Matt, that might be a little bit more willing to deal with the devil, so to speak, when it comes to Jeff Green than they'd care to admit. Teams like the Washington Wizards.
I was going to say the Washington Wizards. They're coming on lately. They won tonight.
Exactly. They're getting heated up a little bit. They've got some dead money in a guy like Nene. And I did the trade machine. I try not to do it anymore because I'm not very good at it. But Jonah Jordan inspired me today, and I hopped on the trade machine. And, again, you can trash this if you want. I completely understand. But Memphis, if Brandon Wright can't get right, you have a hole in your third big. And guess what fits? Jeff Green and Vince Carter for Nene and a draft pick of some kind. If you can convince the Wizards to somehow part with a late, like 2018, because they've got all theirs lined up, still expiring money so they can still pursue Kevin Durant if that is their end game and their end goal, is that something that Memphis should be interested in? Maybe not particularly Nene, but is there a deal out there that you think Memphis should make? And, of course, if it gets you a first-round pick, they should pull the trigger no matter what. But you probably can't get that for Jeff Green at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they could have, they probably would have already.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, I think the Jeff Green to Washington is interesting because he doesn't – I mean, they've been saying for forever they want Kevin Durant. And, you know, this move, it's kind of a sneaky thing because it doesn't stop them from going after Durant. But it kind of gives them, you know, like – they're not in the same situation. If they want to sign Kevin Durant and he says he wants to go there, they can just waive Jeff Green. Oklahoma City doesn't have a chance to match. But if he says he doesn't want to go and he, you know, re-ups, I think Zach Lowe, I was actually angry I hadn't thought of this because it makes so much sense. Zach Lowe said before the season he thinks he's going to do the 1+1 LeBron max contract, and it just makes so much sense. That's exactly what he's going to do. You know, they could offer Jeff Green, you know, $18 million for a one-year contract. He probably would say yes, and they just roll over their cap room to the next year. So they kind of get a ready-made stopgap at small forward, which they desperately need. They want to play small so he can slide over to the four. I think if you lottery protect that first-round pick, so basically, you know, they give it up if they do what they want, which is make the playoffs. They, you know, are saved the lottery pick if the Jeff Green thing doesn't work out. I think that they may do that, especially because Nene is always hurt. And if you throw in Brandon Wright, I don't know if I would do that because simply it's a very good value. And every player you give up, you have to replace.
Sure.
And I think Memphis is going to have a tough time with depth next year. And I would really be worried about giving up Brandon Wright.
Well, I must have misspoke. I didn't mean that the trade would be as I have it typed up here. Jeff Green and Vince Carter for Nene.
Oh, okay.
And that would be it. And then Nene would be the first-round pick. So it's assuming that Brandon Wright, even if he comes back from his knee injury after the All-Star break, isn't quite himself. And like you said, Nene is injured most of the time. If you really subscribe to the theory that Memphis will be better once Jeff Green is out of the rotation, who gives a damn if Nene is hurt? Brandon Wright comes back. He's dead money that's going to be gone. You'd lose nothing in terms of cap flexibility, and maybe you prey on the Washington Wizards and their desire to, A, get a kickstart of athleticism in Jeff Green, which is what Memphis wanted, and, B, they want Kevin Durant. So that was my logic with that move. I think it's one of the better ones I've ever done, in fact.
Yeah, it's a good move. I've been thinking about Green. I think you had mentioned them before. They're in your backyard, so you should think of them first anyway.
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that the type of move, I don't think Jeff Green is movable, although that one is conceivable, you know, to Wizards. I think that the Grizzlies should trade any two of Courtney Lee, Matt Barnes, and Mario Chalmers. If I could get either a pick that conveyed next year, like this summer, or a guy on a rookie deal who was like a backup point guard, or, you know, basically somebody who I had some certainty is going to be good, like I would do that in a heartbeat. The deals that I've floated out there are bringing Memphis and Campaign back from Oklahoma City for Mario Chalmers and Courtney Lee. Like you said, Oklahoma City is like very clearly like the third best team in the West. They have no avenues to improve this year. They've already given up their picks. Basically, Campaign is the only asset they have. I think that probably what they're going to do is just hold on to Campaign and try to make like kind of a veil, like a half attempt at improving. Like maybe they try to upgrade, you know, the backup point guard spot, but they get like a Beno Udrih type or something, because DJ Augustine has just been a disaster. But if you think about it from their perspective, if they could just change the DJ Augustine minutes to Mario Chalmers minutes and the Anthony Morrow, Deion Waiters, the Andre Roberson minutes, if they're giving 2/3 of that to Courtney Lee now, who, you know, I think a change of scenery might actually be good for him, because although he's starting to shoot more, but he's going to be so wide open, and he plays defense. And the Thunder don't have a single wing that does both of those things. I think that's worth Campaign. And especially if, like, you know, the Thunder can re-sign both of those guys, and they're both, you know, in their late 20s. You know, Durant is going to be wanting – Oklahoma City's worst nightmare is getting run out in 4 games by the Spurs in the second round. If that happens, they have to worry that Durant's just like, screw this, I'm gone. I'm going out east. I'm going to the Wizards. I don't think he's going to do that, but that's the worst-case scenario, and you should do everything you can. Like, how is Campaign going to keep Durant in Oklahoma City? He's not. But, you know, being respectable against the Spurs instead of getting blown out, that's something that, yeah, like, you know, that's going to keep Durant there. And then the other deal I thought of, which it will never happen, but Chicago could decide. They have very few ways to get better this year, too. In terms of, like, acquiring, they have two holes one on the wing and one at backup point guard, and frankly, one at starting point guard. Chalmers should be intriguing to them too. So something like Chalmers and Barnes for Bobby Portis and their two backup point guards, that works salary-wise. They probably won't give up Bobby Portis, but they have a lot of other assets. Maybe you get Snell. Maybe you get – they own Sacramento's pick this year if it falls outside the top 10, which it's looking like that's kind of like right at the fringe. So maybe you can get Sacramento's pick for two rotation players. I don't know. But that's kind of where I'm at, is if you can get a young player that and the reason the young player is extremely important is they won't make much money next year, so it won't hurt your cap space. So the idea there is I have a cheap young player that fills a rotation spot, and I can still go out and spend all this money on either a max guy or, you know, maybe two guys making $12 million each. And that team becomes – and you throw in, you know, the 18th pick in the draft, that team looks younger and I think is still a playoff team for sure.
I agree with you completely. And I said in a Friday 3 in the past couple of weeks that Memphis should be sellers at this trade deadline. But it's kind of like, yeah, and it's all in the same line of thinking of Kevin Leip, who came out at the beginning of the season and said this is a team in transition, and it might not look like a team in transition because they might still be competing for a playoff berth, but make no mistake, they are in transition. And that is confirmed in my eyes, at least, at this point. And it goes along with what you just said, that I agree completely. Two of those three guys shouldn't be on this roster in a month, whether it's Matt Barnes, whether it's Jeff Green, Courtney Lee, or two of those four guys, I guess I should say, or Mario Chalmers. And you're probably right. Jeff Green might be unmovable at this point. But two of those four shouldn't be on this team. And if you're able to bring in a young guy on a rookie contract or a first-round pick, hell, in the case of Jeff Green, if somebody wants to eat his salary for a second-round pick, maybe you consider it at this point.
I've actually got a Jeff Green trade for you. Do you want to hear it?
Yes.
It's gonna hurt, but I think
– I'll take it.
Okay. All right.
I'll look at his tenants.
Jeff Green for the Hornets – or I'm sorry, the Pelicans' top 6 protected pick and Omer Asik.
Oh. And Omer Asik? Oh, man.
You have to take Omer Asik. He has, after this year, he has 4 years and guaranteed $34 million left.
Now, as you said, the cap goes up, so it doesn't hurt as much long term. But it, goodness gracious, that does hurt, doesn't it? You're being punished for the Jeff Green trade, essentially.
It's a salary dump of one of the only remaining salaries in the entire NBA that a team might want to dump. But you get I think that the Pelicans probably convey a 7 or 8, you know, this year, and getting that type of pick, like those picks aren't moving anymore, you know. And if you can get it, even in a bad draft, nobody knows if it's a bad draft. Nobody knows that.
Yeah.
You know, even the worst, quote-unquote, the worst draft ever had Giannis in it. So,
true. No, you're right.
I don't know. I would do it. I think I would do it. And you know what I would do? I would stretch Omer Asik over 9 years.
I think that's brilliant.
We'll be paying Omer Asik's salary in the year like 2024.
Oh, that's fantastic. I like that idea. We'll get you out of here on this, Matt, and I appreciate your time here tonight here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Always a good time talking with you. We always end the show with a preview of the week ahead. Our next program will be Tuesday night. Philip Dean of Three Shades of Blue Radio will be our guest next Tuesday. Between now and then, Grizzlies play 3 games. They play Denver tomorrow night, Thursday night. They're in Denver against the Nuggets. Saturday, they play the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I love watching Minnesota play. If they find a good coach, they're going to be nasty between Wiggins and Carl Anthony Towns, especially Anthony Towns. He's a blast. And then Monday night, in what should be known as the Matt Arlicka Bowl, it's a home game for the Memphis Grizzlies against the Orlando Magic. Evan Fournier coming to town. So 3 games between now and Tuesday, 3 teams that theoretically Memphis should beat. Do you see Memphis, and every time I do this, I have guests who don't like to make predictions. So at the very least, if you could give me a breakdown of games that you think are winnable, if you think 3-0 is realistic, What would be a successful three-game stretch here for the Memphis Grizzlies in your opinion?
Three and zero is definitely realistic. Minnesota's lost like 9 straight. They've lost to the Philadelphia 76ers. Orlando just lost to the Philadelphia 76ers tonight by 10. Denver usually has that home court advantage, but the Grizzlies had 2 off days. I don't know when they flew up there, but they probably should have flown there yesterday, like late. And I've been up to Denver quite a few times. I can tell you that the first 24 hours are the roughest. The teams that come in on the back-to-back is the worst. I would say 3-0 would be what they should do. And I'll hedge and say, no, I'll say 3-0 is probably most likely. Orlando doesn't have anybody that can guard Gasol or Zebo. Vucevic is just not there. Fry is not there. Fry's at least, you know, long, but I don't know. I think that 3-0 should be, that should be the goal for sure. I mean, none of those teams are going to make the playoffs. So, and I'm with you. Like, Minnesota, just watching Towns is just amazing. Anytime I can watch Towns, if Memphians haven't seen Karl Towns play yet, they need to check him out because, I mean, he's the next Duncan. He's the evolutionary
yep.
Tim Duncan. I really think that this next generation, it's easier to build a team around Karl Towns than it is around Anthony Davis even. Because Towns can score on his own. He's already a better passer than Anthony Davis, and he's 19. Who was the other team that they're playing? Denver? Denver.
Denver, Minnesota, Orlando.
Yeah, that's 3-0. I think they should go 3-0. They might lose one game, but I think 3-0 is what they should be doing.
3-0 is absolutely what they should be doing. And Minnesota, and I looked at it as you were speaking there, Matt, the past 10 games for all three of those teams, Minnesota is 1-9 in the past 10 games.
1-9.
Then you have Orlando, who they play on Monday. Orlando is 3-7 in the past 10 games. And then you've got, I said Denver, I said Orlando, and then the other one was, Denver, sorry. Denver's 4-6. So none of these teams have winning records in their last 10 games. Meanwhile, the Memphis Grizzlies are 7-3. If they think that they are capable of being that 5 seed and having even the faintest of hopes of chasing the 4 of the Clippers, which I don't think they will, but if they want to believe they will, they got to go on a winning streak. They got to go on a run. And it's a good opportunity for them. Because even beyond that, Matt, the rest of the month, they play 2 games, 1 against Milwaukee at home, and Milwaukee is struggling at the moment. Milwaukee, the past 10 games, is 6-4, which is a little bit better than I thought they were.
Yeah, I was about to say, Milwaukee's starting to get it.
Playing a little bit better.
Milwaukee's turning the corner a little bit. Yeah. I watched them a couple nights ago, and it's always tough because I can only check out, like, if I'm able to see every team in the league over the course of 3 weeks now, I'm really lucky.
Right.
I try to, just to kind of stay current, but I must have watched I was thinking to myself, man, did I watch a good Milwaukee game? Because Carter Williams was hitting shots and at least like willing to take them and stuff, and Jabari starting to look better. So, Milwaukee might be tough for the Grizzlies coming up, I think.
Young athletic team, that's fair. Greg Monroe seems to have success against them every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the month, they play Sacramento, and Sacramento is 5-5. That's a team that Memphis should beat. So theoretically, they could go on a nice little run here. It'll be interesting to see as they close out January and January becomes February. Matt, thank you so much for joining me on this special edition of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. We made history tonight, my friend. I appreciate it. Very excited to have you on in the future.
Thanks a lot. Shouts to Ball from Grace, who jumped on the Premier League bandwagon and picked the quote-unquote best team in the Premier League. And also shouts to Hyde Solo Cup, whose team is the worst team in the Premier League. Han Solo Cup.
There you go.
Excuse me.
a little football action there to close out the show. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt. We'll talk to you soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right, buddy. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Matt Arliga, senior writer over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Great conversation there. Make sure you're following him on Twitter if you do not already do so, @TheReal, HRDLICKA. We're wrapping up here, ladies and gentlemen, on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Monax. This has been a great show. I've liked this structure. This has been nice, having the one guest an extended amount of time. I appreciate Matt giving us a little bit more of his time. And it was a good conversation. We covered a lot of stuff there, whether it be the free agency aspect of things. It's amazing. And Matt does a great job of breaking it down, helping me understand it, because I don't always get it. It's fascinating how those cap holds work, how the finagling of when you sign who and who you sign where. It all is just such surgery almost. It makes sense that the NBA salary cap is such a hot topic of conversation for so many heading in, especially to the next couple of years as the cap grows so much. So Matt is somebody that will certainly be a great resource for us over at grizzlybearblues.com as those conversations continue. Talking about Marc Gasol and his issues, talking about Mike Conley and his health, and then, of course, breaking down possible trade targets. Rudy Gay, I'm not as sold on that as others may be. He's certainly, in theory, a better player than he was in Memphis, but his numbers are roughly the same. I'm not sure if that really makes that much of a move. I'm with Matt. I think that if you subscribe to the theory that this team will be roughly the same, moving any of those four kinds of guys, the Chalmers, Jeff Green, Matt Barnes, Courtney Lees of the world, and you can find a way to get a young piece back or a first-round pick, you got to pull the trigger. That Nene deal, I'm going to post it on Twitter, and it's probably going to get me crucified by some folks, but I think I would do it for this season. You're getting a first-round pick. The Wizards honestly believe, as Matt said, I live in the Washington, D.C. area, the Wizards believe they're getting Kevin Durant. They believe that in their heart of hearts. That is their end-game goal. They are going to sign KD this offseason. If you believe that, Jeff Green is an expiring contract, and if you protect that pick for outside of the lottery, or if you protect it so that we only get it in Memphis if it's outside the lottery, what do you lose? You have KD, you have John Wall, you have Bradley Beal, Marcin Gortat, you have Otto Porter Jr. There's your starters for the next 5 years. So I think the Wizards would do that, and I think Memphis would be wise too. Nene, when he's healthy, could give you 20 minutes or so as a third big. It's a big body, as Dave Yeager seems to want so much. And it gets you that first-round pick. It gets you assets back. And I think that's something that's worth looking into. Before we wrap up the show, it is time for the Fan Essentials Grizzly Bear Blues Live Trivia. Question of the week. And I am very excited about this week's question. I am thankful to those who chimed in last week via email and gave me their responses. We had two or three folks who got it right. Therefore, they are moving on to their names being drawn. It's an exciting opportunity. Okay, you get a free Fan Essentials Veteran Box. FanEssentials.net is a primary source for all of your Grizzlies gear needs. You sign up. You can sign up for a variety of different size boxes. And every month, they ship to you a variety of Grizzlies gear, Grizzlies scarves, Grizzlies glasses, Grizzlies shirts, all sorts of great things. FanEssentials.net, the sponsor of Grizzly Bear Blues Live and the Chip Williams podcast here on our GBB Live blog talk radio channel. Make sure you're checking them out. Make sure that you are subscribing to a wonderful service over at fanessentials.net. So you answer this question within the next 24 hours from the end of this recording, okay? So we'll call it 9 p.m. Thursday night, Central Time. You answer the question to my email address, MullinaxJoe, MullinaxJoe, @gmail.com. You send your answer within 24 hours of the show's airtime, and you'll be entered into the monthly drawing. The drawing this month, I believe we will do it on February 4th, so the drawing for January will be the first week of February. We'll draw the name. You'll have your opportunity. You'll send me your information, and you will get your free Fan Essentials box there in that first week or so of February. So exciting times in that regard. Here is the question of the day. Thank you again to Fan Essentials for sponsoring it. Marc Gasol, topic of the show this week, and almost every week, given his prominent role on the team, played his high school basketball in Memphis, Tennessee. What is the name of the high school that Marc Gasol played at? Once again, Marc Gasol played high school basketball in Memphis, Tennessee. Obviously, his big brother Pal was a member of the Memphis Grizzlies. Marc played high school ball in Memphis. What was the name of the high school where Marc Gasol played? You have 24 hours to send that answer to MullinaxJoe @gmail.com. You do that, your name gets entered into the drawing for a Fan Essentials box. Thank you so much to Matt Ardlicka, my guest tonight. Wonderful segment, wonderful drawn-out podcast segment there. Great conversation. Loved talking with Matt. And he's one of the best out there. He really is, folks. Regardless of blogger, writer, whatever it might be, he's one of the most talented. He's one of the brightest. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at TheRealHRDLICKA if you do not already do so. Make sure you're subscribing to the podcast on iTunes. Give us a rating. Give us a shout over there. Give us a review. Subscribe so you never miss an episode of GBB Live or the Chip Williams podcast. And also make sure that you're tuning in January 26th, again, live at 8 p.m. Central Time. That's 9 p.m. Eastern. Our guest, Chris Faulkner, will be back on Tuesday. And our guest will be Philip Dean of Three Shades of Blue Radio. We're excited to have him back on the program talking about these Memphis Grizzlies. It should be 3-0 over the next three games between now and our next show. And if it's not, that's not a failure, but that's a disappointment. If they're less than 2-1, it's a failure. And there's some real problems there if they're not able to beat two of the next three at the very least. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me this and every week here on the program. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is and will continue to be Grizzly Bear Blues Live.